This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wolves podcast. My name is Eric Kasuma, I will be your host today. In today's show, we have Mr. Chris Weston, who serves as the head of research at Pepperstone Markets. I'll let Chris introduce himself.
Well, thank you for having me, Aaron. It's a pleasure to be here today. So now I've been in the markets for about 20 years, so it's good to get back, and hopefully this year's going to show us some great opportunities for us.
Okay. Thanks, Chris, for agreeing to be part of this show today. We'll go straight, generally look at an overview about how the markets have performed this week, and we'll start with the major things that stood out in the week. I think for me what stood out really was the social media ban on Trump and what happened at Capitol Hill the previous week, and that's really escalated, and we've even seen the impeachment of Trump. For you, what are the major things that stood out for you?
I mean, there's two ways to look at this, what happened in the markets, and then obviously what happened in the news flow. I think the news about Trump and impeachment is a fantastically interesting political story
anymore. I think they're looking at other aspects, you know, fiscal stimulus, the vaccine rollout, you know, what's happening with inflation expectations, what's going to happen with the US dollar, and moving around there. I think probably the big story for me has been the moves that we've been seeing in the bond market, and then the subsequent reaction from the Federal Reserve, who are the world's price maker, you know, the central to pretty much everything that's going on. And we've seen, as a result of the movement in the long end of the bond curve, the US Treasury curve, we've seen, you know, the Federal Governor, Jerome Powell, you know, talking, saying that, you know, they're not going to look to taper their bond buying program anytime soon. Mm-hmm. His deputy, Richard Clarida, coming out and saying that they're not going to look to move until inflation or core PCE moves above 2% for a whole year, which is incredible. And then you've had Lael Brainard, who's one of the architects of Fed policy as well, so talking about, you know, no need to move. So I think probably the big thing has been that, you know, major global inflation trade that's been going through, and some people have been speculating that it could mean that central banks in developed markets may have to tighten policy earlier, but the key generals have come out and pushed back on that notion, and I think that's very bullish for stocks and risk assets more broadly.
Okay, and what does that mean for the developments around the vaccine and how that related to that?
The vaccines, there's no doubt, it's a game changer. It's not just a game changer for the human race. But if you look at the big macro debate, it is inflation versus deflation and what that means for economic policy going forward. The vaccine gives us a level of certainty that once it's rolled out, and depending on the taper rate, the effective rate that we're hearing in from a lot of these developers is that it will be significant enough that you probably only need about a 55-60% take up, and that should do enough. But I think what we're looking at now with the vaccine rolled out, it is part of the later 2021 story, that when enough people are vaccinated, there's the pent up demand that's in the system will be revealed. And we're not talking about assets, we're not talking about goods. Goods have already been bought. People have been using the excess cash that they've had through the COVID to buy things like kitchens, to go and do the garden up, to go and buy clothes or whatever. We're talking about services. In a lot of developed market countries, it's the bulk of GDP. So what I think with vaccine rollout, is a game changer that at some stage this year, we're going to see people spending money on services, you know, hotels, restaurants, these factors, and that's going to be, you know, very good for the inflation story and the economic cyclical recovery that we're going to see probably towards, you know, Q2 and into Q3 of this year.
We've seen the markets have really gone up since the year began, with I think the Dow hitting some good highs recently and during the week. And I think one of the things that stood out for me was things investors are keenly, I think, as you know, awaiting details of Biden's stimulus package. And according to media reports, the relief package could be worth as much as, I think, $2 trillion USD. And for them, I think that they really want to aid the economy so that despite the resurgence of this new strain for them, I think they want to revive the economy. What do you think will be the impact on that, on the prices of, let's say, assets in the market? So this could be from equities, gold and all that.
I mean, we've been hearing today that Joe Biden's pushed out a $1.9 trillion fiscal stimulus, so pretty close to what you were saying. I mean, it's what's been discounted into the market for some time now. So, you know, I think it's a positive, and the US clearly needs that level of fiscal stimulus. There's still a lot of people who are unemployed and need that level of fiscal stimulus. But $1.9 trillion has been well telegraphed and is priced into the market, you know. You've also got to remember that there's, you know, as part of that, the benefit checks, you know, they're talking 2,000 each, and then there's going to be 400 billion going to the COVID management, 350 billion going to state and local governments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are massive numbers, but they're discounted into the markets. And if you think that to get through the Senate, you're going to need to see bipartisan support,
mm-hmm.
then it's a pretty... For me, that number of $1.9 trillion will probably have to be scaled back somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, I think there'll be more stimulus going forward, and it sort of complements the idea that it will help the US repair, and inflation is still the way to go. But I think this has been well telegraphed, and I think this is largely priced into markets, and there's not really been much of a reaction today coming from Asia. In fact, if you have a look at the bond market, we're seeing buying, which suggests that it is priced in.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the jobs and all that, I think yesterday the Department of Labor released initial job claims. I think the numbers were, I think, around 965 in the week that's ending, and I think that has gone down a bit. I think compared to last year, things were much worse. I think things are improving. What's your take on the data that came out yesterday?
They were far worse than what was expected. Not, as you say, as you rightly point out, 965,000. The market was looking for 789,000 in the jobless claims. And obviously, recently we saw a big decline coming through in the non-farm payrolls number, which shows that the labour market really needs further fiscal support to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's part of the reason why the Federal Reserve are seeing some inflationary pressures and price pressures coming through. But the labour market needs to heal, and they need to keep their foot on the gas as much as they possibly can to get the private sector running what they call red hot. So, you know, the labour market has repaired, but it's still a long way from where they consider full employment in the US, which is just above 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, the last sort of 7 or 8 days, there's been some pretty poor news for people who watch the US labour market. You know, ADP, non-farm payrolls, and now the weekly jobless claims were worse than expected. So there's clearly more that needs to be done. And for anyone who expects central banks, specifically the Federal Reserve, to start easing up and start looking at changing its language around tightening, well, they just need to look at the labour market. And, you know, it's pretty clear that they're going to keep liquidity very much abundant, and they're not going to tighten anytime soon. So, yeah, we'd like to see that labour market turn around. Some very discouraging signs over the last 7 or 8 days there.
Okay. And that, another interesting asset that has been quite volatile in the week, I think, it's Bitcoin, and I thought it's good we touch about it. Bitcoin has been a bit volatile, and I think Monday there was a bit of an 18% drop that scared traders across the market, but it's regained at its, I think, by yesterday was hitting around 40,000, nearly close to, to the new all-time high. What are your thoughts on that particular, on the crypto?
Look, the volatility in Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the other digital assets is incredible. And for me as a trader, I have tolerance levels where I just won't touch an asset if the realized volatility or the implied volatility is too high. That said, you know, if you are dabbling around in the crypto space, you know, I think the one thing you need to understand with Bitcoin is that with volatility that high, you need to adjust your position sizing accordingly. You know, I would be running very, very small positions. Anything that can correct 20% in a day, you know, you obviously have to adjust your position size and understand, you know, how much risk you're taking on in a position, where your stop loss is going to be, and obviously that dictates your position size. But yeah, look, I like the crypto story. I mean, I think that digital assets are going to play a greater role in our lives as we go on. Obviously, you know, it's a bit of a cliche to say that the technology is amazing. Everyone knows that, you know, part of the blockchain. whether Bitcoin or Ethereum are going to be the ongoing cryptocurrencies that take and continue this evolution, you know, I can't say. But, you know, I think cryptos play an ever greater role in our life. I think it's something that people need to get an education on. At the moment, yeah, you're right. I mean, we've got a trading between 40,000 and 30,000. The markets are just trying to understand what's the next catalyst to take us up a little bit higher in Bitcoin from here. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some consolidation in the short term and just, you know, look for the market to have a bit of a disagreement and, you know, some fairly whippy market moves between those. Mm-hmm. And I think a bit of the catalyst of the acceleration from sort of 10,000 to 40,000 was that, you know, we'd seen a lot of the big whales getting in and some big institutions disclosing their positions. You know, Stan Druckenmiller, Paul Tudor Jones III, there'd been, you know, a number of big funds in the US disclosing those positions. Of course, they disclose their positions when they're getting in. They don't disclose their positions when they're reducing their position. Why would they? Mm-hmm. So I think there's been some big guys getting out and reducing, given the exponential move we've seen. So I'd like to see personally, you know, just a bit of a flush out, clean out those positions before we get another leg higher. I do believe in the crypto story, but if you are going to trade crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever it's going to be, just imagine that the volatility is so high that has to have massive implications for your position size above everything else.
Interesting. As we come to a close of this podcast, probably we can talk about the major currency pairs that you are keenly trading or watching. Probably your thoughts on the, let's say, USD or GBP USD, given the current developments around Brexit and or other major currencies that you can give your thoughts on.
I think the Brexit situation in the UK is past now. We've got a Bank of England meeting coming up soon, and we've got about 3 basis points of cuts being priced in, which I think is probably about fair. But yeah, I mean, pull up a daily chart of the pound against the US dollar, and it's a fascinating one. All the downside seems to be contained into the sort of into the 50-day moving average, 134.30, which is trending nicely. So yeah, we've got a series of higher lows and higher highs coming through. But if you have a look at the daily chart, you can see that around 137.04, there's a really nice ceiling on the trade. If we get a close above there tonight, we'll have a bullish outside week reversal, which portends to a continuation move. But I think if we get a break of 137.04, I think cable looks absolutely fascinating, and I think it looks pretty bullish. So I reckon you get a move up into sort of 139, 140 on that. The dollar is the really key one. You know, like the dollar, if we look at the dollar indexes, we know that's 57% weighted towards euro dollar. Mm-hmm. If you can get your dollar call right, you're going to do pretty well in gold, you're going to do well in equities, you're going to do well in markets. It is so important for the global economy and asset markets more generally. But, you know, I think we are getting to a point where we're putting a short-term low in the dollar, mm-hmm. the dollar index. As I say, cable looks pretty good, but I'm pretty neutral on the dollar now. But what I am looking for in the weeks ahead is a sign that real yields are going to start moving up in the treasury market. That's inflation-adjusted bond yields. When we start seeing that moving up on a more sustained basis, then I'm going to say to clients that we're going to call a much more constructive view on the US dollar, specifically against some of the high beta currencies like the Kiwi and the Aussie dollar. But for now, we're fairly nuanced and neutral on the dollar index. But we do like cable on a break of 137.04. I think if we get that, then that would be pretty good. We're pretty cautious on the Aussie dollar at the moment. We'll have to see what happens with equity markets. We've got US earnings season coming up. It really starts tonight. If equity markets make another leg higher, then we'll probably like to see the Aussie dollar moving up as well as a way of playing that. But for now, pretty neutral on the dollar. But yeah, I think cable looks quite interesting there.
That's it for today. Thanks a lot, Chris, for agreeing to be part of this. Maybe you can tell our audience how they can get in touch with you or follow you across your social media pages.
Yeah, I'm quite heavily involved in Twitter. Mildly addicted to it, should we say. And yeah, you can find me Chris Weston_PS, PS was Pepperstone, and you can see me on Twitter. Twitter's probably the best place for me. I'm pretty active on that. We've also got a Telegram channel here at Pepperstone, so obviously you can reach out and get in touch with that. We post charts and trade ideas and views as well on that sort of thing. But certainly I'd reach out at Chris Weston_PS is probably the best place to get hold of me. So I really appreciate the forum you've given me and obviously enjoy talking about global markets. So if anyone wants to reach out and talk to me about their view on markets, I'm always open to debating markets with anyone.
Thanks a lot, Chris, and looking forward to doing more of these podcasts.